top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, like the guy with the deep voice says. This hour, Mike Rogers, former Michigan congressman, wants to be the next senator from Michigan. He's going to be joining us, too. We'll talk about the new polls with him. Mark Madsen will break down the economy. The Dow is surging right now after that 0.5% tax decrease, interest decrease yesterday by the Fed. They explain it, and a lot of people think it's political. We're going to discuss it. I don't think you can continue to pretend that Jay Powell isn't political. Obviously, he knows he's losing his job if Trump wins. But it's good news for the economy. If it puts money in your pocket, makes you happy with your 401k, I'm happy. But so far, the market opens up 431 points up. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, it's an extraordinary intelligence success. Israel was able to penetrate Hezbollah, the supply chain for these pagers and for the walkie-talkies. It probably took months, if not years, to do that. It causes tremendous harm to Hezbollah.
That is Dan Hoffman, former CIA operative. Israel attacks through the air and through a wave of device detonations. Have they officially opened up a war with Hezbollah?
Number two.
I want to emphasize, we are over 2 months, of course, since Butler. Do you know that the Secret Service still has not given congressional investigators the documents and evidence we have been asking for 2 months? 2 months since Trump was shot in the face.
That is so true. Senator Josh Hawley, he's got a lot of whistleblowers coming to him about the assassination investigations, plural. It also equals frustration and concern. We bring you inside both the near-death experiences of the former president.
Number one.
And the reason I'm here is because it hasn't been done in many decades. It hasn't been done for a long time, but we are going to win New York.
And the crowd roars. Trump rallies on Long Island, getting a key endorsement and making history while Harris rants about deportations and gets ready for Oprah. Under 50 days to go, and we have new polls. It's anyone's race to win. So I was able to go last night to the rally, talk to the president for 10 minutes. We're going to get the unedited version here, and I'm going to put it on One Nation Saturday night at 9 p.m. And I could not be more impressed with, number one, the behavior of the crowd. Just dead set, very patriotic people. You have 18,000 on the inside, about 5,000 on the outside. Now, sometimes people say that, and they go, why don't we see more of the crowd? So what I did is I took video. I went outside, and before I hopped in my car, I went and took video outside, and you see these huge flat screens and the speakers and people just watching, knowing on the inside that you have people that have been waiting since 8 in the morning in order to get inside for free and see the former president of the United States. Look, he's trailing in New York on all the polls, but if you look to what's happening in the city, if you see what's happening in the city, you see the passion he gets right now in Long Island, and you have a Republican Nassau executive and a Republican Suffolk County executive. This would be the 15th biggest, most populous state in the union if it was its own state. And then upstate New York, just think of rural America like Iowa. It leaves you just the city. And good luck with that. You put 67,000 people here taking jobs, space, and taxpayer money. And you lose my sentiment, and maybe I start thinking about another party. So here's a little of Donald Trump last night. Cut to.
How about in Springfield, Ohio? They had 32,000. This is a little beautiful town. No crime, no problem. 32,000 illegal immigrants come into the town, 32. So they almost doubled their population in a period of a few weeks. Can you believe it? And you know what? They've got to get much tougher. I'm going to go there in the next 2 weeks. I'm going to Springfield and I'm going to Aurora.
And that's what he's got to do, because immigration and the economy are going to get him this win if he's going to win. That's what it's got to be. And it's got to close out in 45 days. That was the first question I asked him. How do you close? So I'm looking at the Fox News poll right now, and I think it's so smart to announce Springfield because he's got to go and see for himself. He said, I'm eating dogs, I'm eating cats, and people wanted to jump on that instead of the actual issue. So they say that if you look at the 20,000 Haitians that got dropped into Springfield, they heard there were jobs. But when you came into the town, you need infrastructure for it. You need housing for it. You have taxpayer money for it. These are temporary protection immigrants because it's dangerous in Haiti. Isn't it always? Cuba and Venezuela, too. So they're here. They're looking for a job. But they go. They get all these services. Our vets don't. You don't. And now we have a situation where they don't know how to drive because they don't know the rules of the road. They don't speak the language. They have French Creole. They don't have the speakers in the school for their kids. They got to get the translators and the educators. So these are resources taken away from your kids. But I'm not telling the story of Springfield. I'm telling the story of Brentwood, Long Island. I'm telling you Springfield, Aurora. I'm talking about four separate towns over in Pennsylvania having the same situation. They think they can dump them in small towns. They don't have much political voice, so they can get away with it without telling mayors or governors, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. So that's why I think he's going to go to these places and highlight the problems, talk to the people. It's common sense. Why would you not do this? It is common sense, I thought. Now, Kamala Harris, to me, shows how clueless she is. There was a time when building the wall wasn't as popular. Right now, 60% of the country say build the wall. So they stopped saying, mocking Trump on that. Now Trump says, yeah, we got to get all these illegals out of here. We're going to start with the criminals. So Kamala Harris, in front of the Hispanic Association, thinks she's going to jump on the immigration as if because Donald Trump was against what Lankford, Murphy, and Sinema proposed, now they think it's a political issue. It is not. Listen to her yesterday, cut nine.
And together, CHC, we must also reform our broken immigration system. And protect our dreamers and understand we can do both, create an earned pathway to citizenship and ensure our border is secure. We can do both, and we must do both.
Wrong. The average American, not only me and you, but the average American could not care less about a path to citizenship. And what's worse is you get all this free stuff. You beat the whole system by going through the border illegally. Then you get to stay. Then you get money. Then you get college education if you're in California. Then you get free housing. Then you get a stipend if you're in New York City. And then you want to get a pathway to citizenship? What about all these morons or stooges that now do the system the right way? You provide a pathway to citizenship, you're providing a surge at the border. You can't do both. We already know you can't do both. Cut 10.
And while we fight to move our nation forward to a brighter future, Donald Trump and his extremist allies will keep trying to pull us backward. We all remember what they did to tear families apart. And now they have pledged to carry out the largest deportation, a mass deportation, in American history. Imagine what that would look like and what that would be. How's that going to happen? Massive raids? Massive detention camps? What are they talking about?
Yes. There's going to be places where they're going to be able to pick up, well, first off, the criminals. You know, you got 360, I think, over the last 6 months. You got thousands here. You're going to bulk up ICE, maybe triple the ICE force. They're going to go and take these criminals out of the country. Then they're just going to get the people, illegals, the gotaways, and track them down and use some surveillance and intelligence. And then they're going to work on other people that are here. Make sure when they get their day in court, if they are looked at not here legally, it's not a reason to declare for amnesty or asylum. They're gone. And that's what they're going to do. And there might be a situation because you let 8.5 million people in illegally. You heard Jay Powell yesterday. Part of the reason why unemployment's going up is because millions of immigrants are taking the jobs from Americans. Does that matter to you? They're going off the old playbook. Someone update her teleprompter. Someone refresh it. Because if you're a Democrat, do not go there because the American people have left from there. And lastly, the Iranians have hacked in to the Trump campaign. They've provided emails. They went through Roger Stone, that moron, and they've gone through somehow, got through him like they got through John Podesta, and they were able to go there and find out who wrote him and everything. They get into the Trump campaign and provided the information to media outlets and to the Harris campaign, formerly the Biden campaign. And FBI has confirmed Iran did just that. Now, did anyone turn that over? Is anyone saying this election is tainted? Can you imagine if the Russians hacked into Harris and gave it to Trump? They probably wouldn't even have an election in November. Trump would probably be in jail again. They'll probably say somehow he's working with the Iranians. But that's what they did. It's not getting enough attention. I'm going to give it attention. Mark Matson next on the economy. Mike Rogers next on this intelligence, winning in Michigan. And then I'll go over the polls in a little bit more detail. So glad you're here. Busy Thursday. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We do our work to serve all Americans. We're not serving any politician, any political figure, any cause, any issue, nothing. It's just maximum employment and price stability on behalf of all Americans. And that's how the other central banks are set up too. It's a good institutional arrangement, which has been good for the public. And I strongly believe that it will, you know, continue.
So that is the rate cut that Jerome Powell was talking about. They say the interview is as important as the move. What came out of his press conference? Let's ask Mark Matson. He's a Matson Money founder and CEO and author of Experiencing the American Dream, How to Invest Your Time, Energy, and Money to Create an Extraordinary Life. Mark, your thoughts about the rate cut and your thoughts about his comments after.
Yeah, I think the rate cut was largely just kabuki theater. Most people believe that the Fed actually determines the rate cut. In reality, the Fed kind of follows interest rates around. It's not going to have a massive impact on anything. Credit card rates are going to stay the same. Mortgages are going to stay the same. It won't affect inflation. So that's mainly just dramatics.
But is it true that he doesn't do that if he doesn't feel inflation's under control?
I don't think the liberals care about inflation. I don't even think that really shows up.
Do you
on
look
their
at
radar.
Him as a liberal, Jay Powell?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he was put in office by liberals, so it only makes sense that he would be one. Look, people need to on their portfolios. They need to understand a couple things. One, no one can predict what's going to happen in November. No one can predict exactly what's going to happen with interest rates. So, but you want to own equities. You want to own stocks. You want to stay diversified. And if it does drop, if there's a recession, you want to rebalance and buy more equities while they're down instead of panicking, which is what everybody does.
The market's up at about 500 points. I was able to speak to the former president last night. He indicates he thinks politics played a role in the amount. Instead of a 0.25 cut, it was a 0.5 cut. So that's an enormous cut. Is that also going to affect the labor market?
Well, everything affects everything. The problem with trying to predict what's going to happen is everything is so interconnected. There's tendrils going everything. There's an idea in economics and in physics called the chaos theory. That means little teeny changes here and there can have massive blown up results. Investors need to be careful right now. The two things that are up, S&P's at all-time high. Tech stocks are all-time high. Reminds me of 95 to 2000. U.S. stocks made 22.5% for 5 years running. Tech stocks made 45%. But following that, the U.S. large stocks lost half of all their value. Tech stocks lost 75% of all their value. And if you're getting ready to retire for your American dream, you cannot take that type of hit. People need to go back, analyze their portfolios, and see exactly how much risk they're carrying.
Or as they're, who's ever managing it. Here's whether politics is playing a role. Cut 31.
How do you respond to the criticism that will likely come that a deeper rate cut now before the election has some political motivations?
Yeah, so, you know, this is my fourth presidential election at the Fed, and, you know, it's always the same. We're always going into this meeting in particular and asking what's the right thing to do for the people we serve. And we do that, and we make a decision as a group. And then we announce it, and that's always what it is. It's never about anything else. Nothing else is discussed. And
is that true? And aren't these mostly public hearings? Or no?
Everything's public. Everything's political. There is no thing. There's hardly anything in the world today that's not political. Look, they're trying to put a lipstick on a pig here about the economy and how well it's doing. The reality, it's not doing well at all. Prices are still up 30% from when they were down. Investors are still afraid. Everything's very contentious coming up to the election. My warning to investors is, look, don't panic. Things could get worse before they get better, but you have to see that as an opportunity to rebalance and buy when it's low.
How come people don't seem to care about the deficit? I know we pay more to the deficit on a daily basis, $3 billion on interest. It doesn't seem it ever comes up anymore.
These are two things that have to be brought up because they're critical. One is taxes. And I don't hear really even Trump talking enough about taxes, because if Kamala gets in, they're going to do away with the tax cuts that Trump had in. That's going to be about a 20 to 30% increase for most Americans. That's going to be disastrous. And the other thing is the national debt. No one's talking about bringing it down. Which is going to be critical for our long-term success.
Because we're in peacetime now. This should be a moment.
It should be a moment. And look, inflation is a regressive tax on the people that can afford it the least, which are the poor and the middle class. Mm-hmm. And we have to get that under control. And the way you do that is by having energy to go back up.
Right.
You also do it by closing the border. We can't have so many people coming in, eating up the resources of the American government.
Mark Mattson with us from Mountainous. He's the founder of Mattson Money. So the one thing he did say yesterday, too, I found astounding. He said part of the reasons why the unemployment's going up, now it's at 5, is because we have illegal immigrants, basically immigrants taking those jobs. So he's admitting it. So you put 8 million people into it. Many go into the workforce, even though they're not supposed to. They go in there, they get hired, and it's knocking other people out.
Yeah, there's two reasons. Number one is yes, they're taking jobs. But secondly, we have a workforce that doesn't want to work. We have 9 million jobs out there that no one will take.
Is that true?
It's absolutely true. You know, these Gen Zers and the people that want to go to work and automatically make $200,000 a year, because they have a liberal degree from some college somewhere. They don't know the value of hard work, the value of independence, and they are really expecting something from nothing. They think they can sit in their basement and make money without going to work.
I don't like putting down a whole group of people ever, whether it's people at Fox or Met fans or Yankee fans, whatever it is. But they say Gen Zers. Bosses that have hired Gen Zers, 75% say they've either fired them or regret it. Have you noticed that? They said between etiquette, work ethic, the way to dress, the way to act, they are lacking in almost everything. Have you noticed this?
Well, absolutely. I have 70 employees, and you have people that want to work at home. They don't want to work long hours. They don't want to work hard. You know, look, they did a survey about the American dream. People want a home. They want a nice job. They want to be able to retire someday. They want to have a family. And then they asked, the second question was, will this be easy? And only 8% said it would be easy. But they're missing the whole point. It's not about easy. It's the American dream has always been about hard work, industrious work, not sitting at home, you know, looking at YouTube and binge watching Netflix and think you're going to make $100,000 a year. It's not going to happen.
I saw Dana White, the CEO of UFC, said this generation doesn't want to work, but if you're a savage, you really have a chance to shine like none of the previous generation. So buck your generation. Be the one to outwork everyone. Mark Mattson, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, it's an extraordinary intelligence success. Israel was able to penetrate Hezbollah, the supply chain for these pagers and for the walkie-talkies. And it probably took months, if not years, to do that. And then they were able to design what was in effect a kinetic cyber operation. And they had this on the shelf to use at a time and a place of their choosing. And these are the results that we've seen. It causes tremendous harm to Hezbollah, causes a lot of distrust in their communications, and creates essentially a fog of war, makes it very difficult for them to launch attacks against Israel and to deal with the Israeli airstrikes that we're seeing now.
Former intelligence agent inside Moscow, inside Iraq, and multiple other locations, Dan Hoffman weighing in on the incredible intelligence operation that had somehow the infiltrating into the supply chain of Hezbollah, located in Lebanon. So when they went to, they said, well, they're a little worried about community people listening in on their phone calls. So the Nasrallah, who runs Hezbollah, said, get rid of all you Hezbollah fighters. Get rid of your cell phones. We're going to get pagers. They order them from Taiwan through Budapest with their shell company. Seems to be a shell company. And they get arrived. Somewhere in between, it seems, the Israelis got into the pagers, put some liquid explosives in there, put a switch in there that would enable them to eventually, when they chose, call those pagers, heat up, explosions go off, and they would immediately attack thousands of Hezbollah who were all carrying these pagers. And people like the Iranian ambassador carrying the pager, which means you're a warfighter, you're a terrorist. And they've killed thousands, wounded hundreds, wounded thousands, killed hundreds. And then the next day, through solar panels and through walkie-talkies, surged again. Could this be the perfect time to stage a hit on Hezbollah, a serious one? After all, they've sent so many rockets since October 7th and the Hamas attacks. They've had moved the Israeli citizens, about 60,000, out of their homes into central Israel, which is only the size of New Jersey. Mike Rogers has seen a lot as a former congressman, former chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee, former FBI agent who's also served in the military, now running for the U.S. Senate seat in Michigan. Mike, before we talk about your Senate race, just your take on this Israeli operation, even though they haven't really owned it yet.
Yeah, and to me, the interesting part was the second wave, because they went after their command and control. So they had stocked up, Hezbollah had stocked up these basically walkie-talkies.
Pagers.
Yeah, well, the second phase was walkie-talkies. They were going to use that in an attack, so a big battle into Israel. They were going to use these walkie-talkies. They were going to give that out for their command and control. So this was a long-term plan that looks like to me that they were trying to intercept any big action into Israel. I thought it was, you know, fascinating, and it was long-term planning. I heard Dan Hoffman, who I know, was talking about the fact that this had to take a long time. It did. The first wave, and then I think they blew up the second wave because they knew that they were going to get caught with this stuff in these radios.
They are the gold standard of terrorists. They're the best. Hezbollah.
Oh, yeah.
They've been around the longest, blew up our Marines in the 1980s. We finally got the guy responsible for that. We didn't get him, but the Israelis did, with through great intelligence, right into his townhouse.
Yep.
Amazing. So that's what flipped out. Not only he's dead, but it flipped out that they knew, because this guy had no social media footprint. He had no electronic footprint, no satellite footprint, but the Israelis knew. So they killed him. They're waiting for the response still. And then they hit like this. From what you know, Congressman, don't you think this is the moment to attack? If war with Hezbollah is inevitable, this is the time where they're in disarray. They don't even know how to communicate with each other now, afraid to pick up anything except maybe a cup and a string.
Yeah, well, and surely they don't want to go home and watch TV anymore. They're going to look at that remote once or twice before they get at it.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, exactly. So, listen, this is probably the time to diminish their military capability on the border. And I'm guessing
the airstrikes are already taking place.
Yes. And they launched apparently some other attacks last night as well. So when you look at what they were doing, I think it was preemptive. That for even the first round was preemptive in my mind. I think they knew that this attack was coming. And if you know it's coming, you have every right to try to disrupt that attack. And I think what you see now is going into this phase of let's degrade them militarily so that they can't come across the border and kill a lot of Israelis.
I do worry about this being the new wave of warfare. You and I have to wonder, should we pick up our phones?
Yeah.
You know, because this is another way when drones started and we want to get Hellfire missiles on drones. Look where we're at now. Remember when Rumsfeld said, you know, these drones are great, but wouldn't it be great to get a rocket with them? Next thing you know, we got with the Ukraine war, not because of it, but how they fight it. But the AP says Lebanon's health ministry said that 20 people were killed, 450 were wounded yesterday, let alone the thousands that were wounded the day before and overwhelming all the hospitals. That sends a great message. On the other side, there's negotiations taking place, and it's been an epic fail. So they can't get the hostages out. They can't get anyone to agree. Forget about blaming. They're talking about doing one titanic deal where Sinwar gets exile. The IDF pulls out. All hostages and hostage bodies are given up. Whatever they're going to give in prisoners are given up right away. And there's an international force in Gaza. From what I just told you, first blush, I'm giving this to you, came out of the Jerusalem Post today. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think that's workable. You have to be careful that you cannot engage other Hamas terrorist fighters. The last count I heard, there were about four battalions worth left of Hamas trained Hamas terrorists who had capability. So you want to make sure that you've degraded that enough at the time of this deal. But I do think that deal sounds workable to me. I mean, a foreign force in there does not sound delightful. But
who are this part? Who are these people?
Yeah, who
remember
would
they
be?
Send more, no more rockets if we give you Gaza, and there were daily rocket attacks from Gaza.
Completely, and they said, "Oh, help us rebuild." And they were sending concrete, and they were using the concrete to build tunnels. So, listen, they're not to be trusted. I do think that they could have a ceasefire, at least a temporary one, with an exchange of the hostages. That should happen.
This would be permanent. But yeah. Having said that. I don't want to get too much on a tangent. Egypt knew these tunnels were being built. There's no way they could. There's someone who were 10 feet high.
Yeah.
So they had to know. Now Egypt, we've restored the aid to Egypt, all right, even though their human rights abuses continue. You might want to do that. What bothers me most is they said, we're not buying your F-16s or F-22s. We're buying China's. And we give them the aid. So you're going to allow China to get a foothold in Egypt and now be obligated to find a way to pay for that when we helped you bail out yourself with an IMF loan, and then we're going to look the other way at the tunnels, which shows you lied to us, and now you're going to say, we don't need your F-22s, we're going to get them from China? At what point do we get a spine?
Well, hopefully soon. I hope after November 5th we get a spine. Listen, these countries know that they can push back this administration and get away with it. And by the way, the administration just can't seem to bring themselves to say, well, that's great, you can do that, but you're not going to get any of our money. Now, there is value in the intelligence relationships in Egypt with Israel, with the United States, but it's not worth it to give China the ability to move military gear in and out. And by the way, that presence of China causes us all kinds of problems from an intelligence perspective in Egypt. Not good for us, not good for our Israeli friends in the long term, and certainly not good for stability in the Middle East.
And just remember, who let Russia back into the Middle East? It was Barack Obama.
Yeah.
They basically showed the weakness. Assad's about to go. We did nothing. In comes Russia to save the day, knocks on our door and say, we're also going to have relations with Iraq. So they're back in the Middle East. Now China's back in the Middle East. We were, since the 1980s, the only one playing a role in that area. It's a big responsibility, but it's one I think America should have.
And they gave him the port, basically, in Syria. They said, you can, in all those negotiations, we're not going to push you on the port in Syria. And Russia needed that port desperately.
Absolutely.
It was a great way to kind of poke at him.
And it's amazing what the Ukrainians have done to the Russian Navy without a Navy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But just lastly, yesterday was confirmed, officials confirmed, the FBI, that Iran is efforting to influence our elections by hacking into the Trump campaign, Roger Stone's email and some others, and providing that intelligence and all that information to media outlets, including Biden Harris. Yeah. We've confirmed it. Now, what's the right way to respond? We publicly confirmed it. We knew about it anyway.
Yeah.
What's the right way to respond for the sitting administration?
Well, listen, they have got to recontain Iran. This notion, all the problems you see happening in the Middle East is absolutely at the feet of this administration, the Biden-Harris administration. It started in Saudi Arabia when they told them, hey, listen,
you're the pariah nation.
Yeah, and you can't go after the Houthis, and that we stopped selling them stuff to protect themselves. Remember,
and
the Houthis?
We pulled them off the Houthis off the terror list.
And then right after that, we gave Iran the ability to wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sell oil on the market. And guess what? That gave them billions of dollars. This whole thing is at their feet. So to say that they're going to fix any of this is just such utter nonsense. So what they need to do, if you want to get this right, and it shows you how aggressive, by the way, Iran is being, where they are that blatant. They knew you were going to get caught eventually doing it that blatant. I mean, this is like
they're daring. They said they're not going to respond.
Yeah.
So what about another hack? Keep it up. Now, if the Russians hacked the Harris campaign and gave it to Trump, what do you think the reaction would be?
Well, yeah, I don't know if they could do anything anyway. I think a sternly worded memo is the order of the day of this administration.
Well, I think they might even cancel the election. They might go to the Russians again and try to control the election. I mean, they think the Russians gave them the 2016 election. A lot of these people, they're afraid to say, but they still, like Hillary Clinton, still believe that.
Yeah. No, they do. And here's the thing. Iran is, this is what they need to understand. All of these hostile nations are going to try to engage in cyber activities that would disrupt information operations, disinformation operations.
Make us doubt the results.
Absolutely. They're going to do that because it's in their interest. It has nothing to do with Republican Party or Democrat Party. It's in their interest. So Iran obviously hates Trump because of the fact that they took out Soleimani, who was an icon. And, you know, he was basically the special forces and CIA all rolled into one. Clearly, they want to have cause us some problems, and we're looking for ways to do it. If it's not that way, they're going to come at us in different ways, terrorist ways. They're going to come at
us. They hired an assassin.
Yes.
That was coming here with Pakistani background. We're going to come here and looking for Americans to kill Trump.
Yes.
So we got him in New York City because the FBI realized he was landing, what he would be like. They stepped forward. They put a guy that acted like he was interested, but he was actually an American. And then they got him, and he's under arrest. So I want to talk about your race in Michigan. It looks like, if I'm looking at some of the polls, Marist has you down 7. On average, you're down 5. Quinnipiac has 5. We also have an MIRS poll that has you down, had down 3 to Slotkin.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So we're over the last 4 polls that we've seen, so the AARP poll has us down 2. Our poll has us down to, I think it's much closer than some of those other polls that you see. So we're within the margin of error and have been in the margin of error the entire time. So, and it's starting to close. Our polls are actually tightening and they're not getting wider. And this is after they've spent $37 million calling me everything but by my Christian name. And we just went up on TV last week. So we think we're winning this thing for 2 reasons. A, we have a ground game that is uncomparable. We have never done this in the state of Michigan at the level we're doing it now. Two, the issues matter. And we're connecting with voters on the issues. Their grocery costs, illegal immigration, China is a big deal in Michigan. The people who build things in Michigan are terrified that they're going to lose out in the next election.
So the whole electric car thing seems to me, as an outsider, seems to be something that needs to be explored. I was there when the CEO of Ford asked us to come out and talk about the Lightning, the Ford F-150 Lightning. It's electric.
Yes, all electric.
Yeah, and it was a self-driving car, and it's great, and we don't make enough, and the orders are through the roof. They've gone so poorly, they've shut down the plant. And when you also, they tell me, to build an electric car, you need a lot less manpower.
Yeah, 40% less
40% less manpower. So if you're giving mandates to buy electric cars that nobody wants, that less people have to build, and then you have another party saying, we're not going to come off the combustion engine, people want the F-150, they don't want the Lightning. So it seems to me that a lot of the green technology and the green push, subsidized by American taxpayers, seems to be leading to hurt the union worker and hurt the Democratic cause. Have you been able to tap into that?
Yes, absolutely. We're talking to these, and these are small. So we have 1.1 million workers associated with an internal combustion engine. So think parts. So they're not all union jobs. But they're all, those small non-union shops that are making pieces and parts for these cars. Huge, right? You take 40% of that. Imagine in Michigan when they get what they want. When the Democrats win the day, they get 400,000 less manufacturing jobs. That is a killer for a state like Michigan. And so people are understanding. And here's the other part. They don't want to drive them. It doesn't work for everybody. In cold weather, guess what? We got some cold weather in Michigan.
I heard.
Yeah, it's the rumor. It's going around. Yeah. You know, come in February. We'll find out for you.
I'll invite you.
So,
Congressman, hold that thought. Yeah. We're going to come back right after this break. Brian Kilmeade Show with Mike Rogers wants to be the next senator from Michigan.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We are back. Mike Rogers in studio. He's going to be doing America's Newsroom shortly. He wants to be the next senator from Michigan, longtime congressman there on the Senate, on the House Permanent Select Committee, FBI, military background, now going back after leaving CNN, which is the hardest to survive, more than the FBI and the military.
Hey, they needed a Republican over there, for God's sake.
What is your take on the media and the way you're trying to, now that you're, you need publicity. You need people to talk to you. How are you being treated compared to Elisa Slotkin?
Oh, my. If you can find me an honest journalist, that's in journalism, please let me know.
What do you
Send
mean?
Me a note.
Give me an example.
We just can't get. Let me give you just a how. We had Mike Pompeo come in to talk about the China issue. We had a press roundtable. This is all our local press across Michigan. Do you know he didn't get one question? They started talking about all of the Democrat attacks on IVF and all of the other things that the Democrats are trying to push. So here we have a guy that's been Secretary of State, CIA director, and you make him available to local press. You would think this would be a great opportunity for them to talk about why China in Michigan is bad. Not one question. It was really incredible. They wanted to talk about some press release the Democrats sent out the day before, you know, attacking us on one thing or another.
And is that your take on the debate, too?
I was very disappointed.
January 6th and Obamacare.
You fact correct one, but you didn't fact correct the other. None of that looked right to me. And it just worries me. I really have lost faith in the journalistic integrity across America. I don't care if you're a local paper or you're ABC National News. It worries me a lot.
We got great radio affiliates who are honest listening to you right now. What is your closing argument? What is your closing argument to the people of Michigan?
So big problems in Michigan. It's the first time in our history that we import more food than we export. First time in our history that foreign cars are outproduce domestic cars in America. First time $1 trillion on your credit card debt. First time the interest payment on our national debt is bigger than the Department of Defense, all given us in the last 4 years. If you want lower gas prices, a better economy, a better future for your kids, and you don't want to be beholden to China, you really need to send Mike Rogers to the Senate. We do. We're still negotiating the final details, but it'll be the second about the second week of
October. How much will it matter?
Candidly, probably not a ton, unless I just have a complete train wreck.
Which is not going to happen, because you live this. You don't have to memorize this, unlike other people.
Yeah.
Mike Rogers, good luck on TV. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, a city and a state that Donald Trump thinks he can now win. He had a huge rally last night. I'll go into details. I was actually there. And by the way, this is a place where 75% of the crime is committed by illegal immigrants. So you might have a problem in your city, your small town. That's fine. I can relate to it in this city. And I don't live in the city, but in the town right next to me, let's say 25 minutes away, they got a huge problem. And then I was talking to teachers out on the North Shore, and they were saying that they get just 4 or 5 kids dropped into their classroom a year who don't speak English. And all their time ends up being, this is how you spell cat. Unbelievable. Mark Thiessen standing by. He's got a great column out today. Link Lawrence here, former senior advisor to RFK Jr. and big-time influencer. And also have some great news. Our family of affiliates continues to grow at a huge rate. We're now welcome in Waverly, Ohio. So glad you're there. It is the Eagle 100.1 FM, where Patriots live. I love them already. And our presence in Ohio continues to grow. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, it's an extraordinary intelligence success. Israel was able to penetrate Hezbollah, the supply chain for these pagers and for the walkie-talkies. It probably took months, if not years, to do that. It causes tremendous harm to Hezbollah.
That is Dan Hoffman, CIA guy. Israel attacks through the air and through another wave of detonations, device detonations. Have they officially opened a war with Hezbollah? I think so.
Number two.
I want to emphasize, we are over 2 months, of course, since Butler. Do you know that the Secret Service still has not given congressional investigators the documents and evidence we have been asking for 2 months? 2 months since Trump was shot in the face.
Josh Hawley's been great on this. He's got whistleblowers coming forward. That was for the first assassination. Now we got two. Assassination investigation equals frustration and concern. We bring you inside both near-death experiences for the former president.
Number one.
And the reason I'm here is because it hasn't been done in many decades. It hasn't been done for a long time, but we are going to win New York.
Well, if he ends up doing that, it's game over. Trump rallies on Long Island, getting a key endorsement and making history while Harris rants on deportation and gets ready for Oprah. I hope she feels the joy. Another under 50 days to go until we have a new president. It's anyone's race to win. Mark Thiessen joins us now. His column just came out. The headline tells it all. Trump disavowed Project 2025, but Harris still owns her Project 2019. Mark, welcome back. You're the first, I believe, to interview the former president after the shooting, the attempted shooting and the assassination attempt that took place on Sunday. I read your column, but what you as a human being, what was your takeaway from this?
How he was completely not shaken by it, at least showed no signs of it. I mean, first of all, I'm coming in. I had scheduled the interview previously, very kindly I was in Florida, and they said, well, we were figuring out a schedule in the wake of what happened, and they said he canceled all his interviews but you, which so I was very honored that he did that. I'm sitting in his office. He walks in, doesn't even bring it up. He starts talking about Project 2025, starts talking about all sorts of different issues, and I had to bring him to it. And he was like, look, I said, how did it affect you? And he said, it hasn't affected me. I mean, people keep asking me that, but I try not to think about it. I'm focused on, trying to win an election and save the country. So I was just amazed. He told me the story and walked me through it. What he says is, which I think is true, that when they go out and they constantly say that you're a threat to democracy and that democracy is on the ballot, and then if he wins, our democracy is over, then some lunatic out there is going to take that seriously and try to do something about it. And that's what we see now twice. And so this, I think, Joe Biden, after the first assassination, said we all need to tone down our rhetoric. And then they just threw that out, completely, and have gone back to, campaigning about saying how he's going to be in democracy. And it's just, Britt Hume was on my podcast a few weeks ago, and he said, democracy isn't on the ballot. Democracy is the ballot. And the people are going to decide. And if they elect Trump, that's democracy. And I think that's exactly right.
Right. So think about this. President Bush was in the middle of two wars, a 9/11 attack. I didn't hear anything about assassination attempts on the 43. You have a guy that kept you out of wars, who's out of office, and we've got two attempts on his life, let alone the court cases, I assume, unrelated. So the threat's unbelievable. I thought the Italian prime minister came out yesterday, Meloni, and I'll just paraphrase. She said they tried to put him in jail. That didn't work. They tried to stop him before he could run again. That didn't work. Now they're trying to kill him. And that's the perception from outsiders. So the same thing in Germany. They can't believe what's going on. They fear a civil war here. They can't figure out what's going on in America, because on the surface, we got a championship team if we can ever get out of the locker room and play the game.
What would cause a civil war? If Donald Trump was killed. if one of these assassins has succeeded, and keep in mind in that first one, if he had turned his head just slightly, he would be done. Can you imagine what would happen in this country? And if it's after two assassination attempts, now a third one, if someone took him out, people would believe that this was a conspiracy, and they would think, and it would this country would erupt. The worst thing that could happen to our democracy, the greatest threat to our democracy, is if something happens to Donald Trump.
Which I want you to hear from Josh Hawley last night, and he was caught up in the first one. The fact that we have this guy, we still don't know the motivation of the assassin, but we had to quickly cremate his body. Why would you even do that? I mean, can we just get an autopsy first and find out exactly how he died and who shot him and whose bullet it was? Because that's even unclear. A guy gets on the roof of a building a short distance away in a camouflage outfit, never told anybody, but knows how to put IEDs in cars. Really? Three encrypted apps we can't open? That doesn't disturb you? Had a conversation overseas right before the attack? That doesn't worry you? Is he just some lonely kid who has nothing to do after high school? Can you please try to answer that question? They don't. And then we have another assassination attempt with a lunatic in a pink shirt who tells everybody how much he hates Trump, writes in a book that Iran should assassinate him, but yet he's not red flagged repeatedly and stays outside the Trump golf course for 12 hours before he was eventually shot at and fled the scene. Here's Josh Hawley, Cut 19.
The Secret Service, the FBI, DHS have not been forthcoming on this. Jesse, I want to emphasize, we are over 2 months, of course, since Butler. Do you know that the Secret Service still has not given congressional investigators the documents and evidence we have been asking for 2 months? 2 months since Trump was shot in the face. Now he has been shot at, or nearly so, again, and still Secret Service is stonewalling right down to this hour. I mean, what is going on here? They need to level with us. They need to level with the American people.
So they say that they've given 2,800 pages of responsive documentation and have employees available for interviews if requested. They say they're being cooperative. The problem is we as outsiders don't see the cooperation or the results.
No, that's exactly right. And also keep in mind, like, so it looks like these guys are two unhinged people, right? There is an active Iranian plot to kill Donald Trump in retaliation for the Soleimani strike. The idea that after the first assassination attempt, that they did not give him presidential level security, the same security level that they're giving to Joe Biden, is absolutely outrageous. We know that the Iranians are trying to assassinate him.
Right.
Bolton and Pompeo. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. The incompetence involved here. And look, Trump is very defensive of the Secret Service. I know, having worked for a president, that they become very, very close to their Secret Service detail and the people who are protecting them. And I think the people who were on his detail are very dedicated. They risked their lives. Those people threw themselves on top of him and with an active shooter there. But more broadly, the Secret Service is an institution. The fact that they did not have perimeter security of the same kind that they would have had for President Biden around that golf course is an absolute disgrace. And I just don't understand how they can continue to allow him to be at risk.
So Project 2025 seems to be, no matter how many times Trump says, it is not my playbook, I haven't read it. Because some people used to work for me doesn't mean I wrote it. So yesterday, Hakeem Jeffries had it up, still talking about it. That's brought up all the time by Kamala Harris. You understand that Kevin Roberts, as bright as he may be with the Heritage Foundation, as powerful as may be, has nothing to do with the administration. If the Brookings Institute came out with a manifesto, would I pin it to Harris? It would be illogical. So it doesn't seem to matter. So you took that topic and you compared it to what we do know. And that is the last time Harris ran for president. We do know what she stood for. She talked about it.
Yeah. So first of all, I talked about this with President Trump. In fact, it was the first thing that he raised with me when we sat down. And he is apoplectic at the Heritage Foundation and Kevin Roberts. His attitude is basically, who the hell do these people think they are? And he's right. I don't understand how. You know, I think that there's probably no think tank president in the history of our country has done more damage to a presidential campaign and the efforts to elect a conservative than Kevin Roberts and the Heritage Foundation. So these people should be persona non grata if Trump is elected.
But for publishing it, what do you mean?
It's that they did mandate for leadership for Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. I get that. They were collecting resumes. They were vetting people. They presented themselves as sort of a Trump transition project for them. I mean, literally, they have a resume bank going where they were vetting people to see if they were MAGA enough to serve in a Trump administration. They wanted to have an agenda and a staff ready to go, and they presented themselves as such, and they handed it on a silver platter to the Democrats. I'm sorry. Now they're distancing themselves. They were not at the start of this. This is an incredibly damaging thing that they have done. But look, here's the thing. Trump had nothing to do with this. He's renounced everything in Project 2025. And yet Kamala Harris has Project 2019, which is, in her own words, it's her entire agenda that she campaigned on in the 2020 campaign election. And the media, she's just disavowing it, and everybody's saying, yeah, she doesn't believe that anymore. You know, so Trump is held to account for something he had nothing to do with, and she's absolved of every radical, crazy policy position she took as a candidate the last time she ran for president.
That's a great, it's just a great analogy. So she's allowed to walk away from her own views, but the president is linked to a project that he's not linked to, that he shouldn't be linked with, a think tank that he's never been with. Here's Kevin Roberts yesterday on, has President Trump embraced Project 2025? Cut 14.
No to both, because that's not how we can operate as a public policy organization. We have to be candidate agnostic as a 501c3. And so Mr. Trump is not only telling the truth when he says that, he's also reminding people that we all operate in our lanes. Those of us who are think tank leaders are in one lane, campaigns are in another, political parties are in another. And we've been doing this since 1980. And every single one of those election cycles, Brett, since 1980, we have offered policy briefings to every candidate across the political spectrum. This is what we do in think tank world, is create and cultivate these ideas.
How do you feel about that?
I think that is a CYA operation on the part of Kevin Roberts. They were portraying themselves as the headquarters. First of all, Trump has a think tank. It's called America First Policy Institute. You know, that is actually staffed by his own people and doing that. And they've come up with some policy ideas that might be more likely to be associated with him. But they were portraying themselves as the Donald Trump think tank. And so, you know, this is all after the fact. But again, Trump has nothing to do with this. That's true. Kamala Harris, let me just go through what she campaigned on. She campaigned on banning the sale of gas-powered cars by 2035, federal ban on fracking, ending private health insurance, a $10 trillion Green New Deal plan that she put forward in Congress, decriminalizing illegal border crossing, defunding Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, health care for illegal migrants, including gender transition surgery, decriminalizing all drug possession, including fentanyl, bailing out violent criminals, defunding the police, letting felons vote, mandatory gun buybacks, and court packing. And in all, Brian Riedel, one of my favorite budget analysts in this country, the smartest budget analyst in America from the Manhattan Institute, he added up all the proposals she put together in 2019, $46 trillion in new spending she proposed. $46 trillion.
So, I understand.
This is the most radical left-wing platform, and she hasn't explained why she hasn't personally repudiated it. Unnamed staffers do it, and she hasn't explained why. Why are you for fracking now? Did you discover that fracking is wonderful? Are you willing to
admit you were
wrong?
Did you date a fracker?
She's got a campaign ad showing the portion of the border wall that Trump built in her ad, showing that she's tough on illegal migrants. She said that a border wall was un-American, against her values and against American values.
Medieval vanity project.
She's showing the medieval vanity project in her campaign ads.
Mark, it's an explosive article. I hope we get some traction. We're going to do the best we can to do it. It's a great column, well-researched. Mark Thiessen, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, I'll be able to take some calls. Bottom of the hour, we find out what you're really thinking and find out how President Trump is resonating, along with looking at new polls with Link Lauren. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Springfield is a beautiful city. It still is today a beautiful city. We are a city that has been faced with an increase in migrants, and we want migrants, and we want to make sure that we're wrapping our arms around the situation. This wasn't something we brought upon ourselves, and we want to make sure that the world knows that your pets are safe for here. And I know that sounds silly, but also the fact that this is a wonderful community with wonderful people in it.
All right, let's find out if that indeed your pets are safe there, and if it is, they are wonderful people, by going to someone in Dayton, Ohio. They might know. Hey, Tim, you listen on WHIO.
Hey, Brian, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually from Springfield, but I listen from WHIO.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that was Rob Rue, our city manager, who you just had on. And
what's the reality, Tim? What's the reality?
Well, your first segment, when you played Trump saying there's 30,000 Haitians here and they came in a few weeks, that is so much lying and over-exaggerating. And frankly, yeah, there are a lot of people here. And guess what they're doing? They're working. They're going to work. And the people that employ them love them. They come to work on time. They're not drunk. They're not on drugs. They work hard. And they go home. They're lovely people. I've picked some of them up in my car because they're walking, carrying bags of groceries because they don't have a car. Yes, there are a few problems. They don't know how to drive. We do have medical care issues.
What about your schools?
And we don't have affordable housing. Well, the schools, I mean, sure, that's an issue, of course. But we have the same issue with the Latino population. We have translators in schools to deal with that.
Do you have French Creole translators?
No, I don't know of any of those.
Yeah. Thanks, though, Tim. Great real-world stuff.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
New York's a city that's been changed. The face of it's been changed, just like Washington, D.C. has been changed by illegal immigration. It feels like a border town at times. I remember the morning of Election Day 2016, all the reporters were running around Times Square looking for a Trump supporter. They couldn't find them. But all of the police officers, if you ask them, the firefighters who were there protecting us, who did you vote for? They would smile and nod and say, I couldn't possibly say, because they're all Trump supporters. And that's the kind of people he was talking to today.
That was Chris Bedford on Laura Ingraham last night. And that's true. I was out at the rally yesterday, as was somebody next to me right now has been at a lot of Trump rallies. And what happens is, one thing with law enforcement, everybody there is a Trump supporter. I don't know anybody that wasn't happy to be there, would have worked for free. I know people that delayed their retirement in order to work Trump's detail over in the Hamptons, delayed their retirement from special forces in order to have a chance to see the former president. Do you ever remember someone like that in the Oval Office? You think they were waiting to see Kamala Harris or Joe Biden? If you judge passion for a vote, Trump would win walking away. But can he win over the 5% in the battleground states that are still undecided? With me right now is Link Loren. He's a former senior advisor to RFK, a big-time influencer, especially on TikTok. Link, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I just realized walking in here, I've done more interviews on your show than Kamala has ever done as a presidential candidate.
Right. And you know what? She was born in a middle-class family.
Yeah, she was born in a middle-class family where they took care of their lawns.
Right. Yes. We know that. I grew up with people, okay, that proud of their lawn.
Yes.
I mean, is there a bigger put down in the world? I met my great neighbor. Loves his lawn.
Right.
That's great. Hey, I met his wife. His lawn's great. Fantastic. But no, it's so bizarre because her interviews, I've never seen this. Her interviews are like her stump speeches. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you ask. She's going to answer the same way.
The exact same thing. I mean, her interviews are also only 10 minutes long. We can't even get into policy. You ask her, how are you going to make life more affordable for the middle class? She goes on a two-minute diatribe about her upbringing, being middle class, taking care of her lawn. Give us one or two specifics about how you're going to make our lives better. This isn't rocket science.
So here she is yesterday. I want you to hear what she said about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want you to hear this and tell me if it sounds familiar. If it doesn't, feel free to say so. Cut 11.
Okay. The vast majority of parents have a desire to raise their children well. They love their children, but don't necessarily have the resources to do everything their child needs. I grew up understanding the children of the community are the children of the community.
As Trump said, she talks in riddles and rhymes. And then, Brian, I found out tonight she's doing something with Oprah Winfrey. Oprah, not sure we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of policy. She used to interview conjoined twins and people with 11 toes. Is she going to be asking Kamala what her policies are tonight?
No. The last thing we saw Oprah, she did a pretty good AI special, by the way, now on Hulu. But the last time we saw Oprah, she was singing Joy.
Right.
She was actually singing the Joy. So, look, she wants to get elected. She wanted Obama to be elected.
Mm-hmm.
She hurt her career by doing that. 50% of the country says she doesn't care about me. She just wants to win elections.
I mean, Oprah, she's also, you know, she was best friends with Harvey Weinstein, P. Diddy, Ellen DeGeneres, Bill Cosby. She's not the best judge of character. So her endorsement of Kamala Harris, I don't know if it carries that much weight.
That is a great point.
Right?
People are popping up all these P. Diddy videos, including with, I know, Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Everybody apparently is best friends with P. Diddy. I mean, there were rumors for years about what P. Diddy had going on. I mean, I would never go to P. Diddy's house for a sleepover if you're out there listening. So I haven't really been keeping up with this too much. It does explain why there was a baby oil shortage in Los Angeles and Miami. But other than that, I don't know what's going to happen with P. Diddy. But like Oprah Winfrey, best friends with Ellen DeGeneres, we find out she's running the Stanford Prison Experiment backstage at her show and treating people like dirt. So hanging out with Harvey Weinstein, kissing on him, hugging on him, everyone knew what that man was up to. So her endorsement of Kamala Harris means nothing to me.
True. So let's talk about how things – what were you doing in 2016?
Oh, in 2016, let's see, graduating high school, off to college, yeah.
When Trump brought up building the wall, people said racist, hates Hispanics, right. You remember that? In 2024, building the wall, it's pretty much 60% of the country is for it. Stunningly.
Totally.
Right? Barrier, wall, fence, whatever you mm-hmm. want. They're afraid to say it, the medieval vanity project. Mm-hmm. But what I think Kamala Harris is missing is that we're also for deporting about 8 million of the people that came, 8 million mm-hmm. that came illegally, let alone the ones that got away. So listen to this and tell me if you think in the TikTok world, the online world, mm-hmm. that this matters. Cut 10.
And while we fight to move our nation forward to a brighter future, Donald Trump and his extremist allies will keep trying to pull us backward. We all remember what they did to tear families apart. And now they have pledged to carry out the largest deportation, a mass deportation, in American history. Imagine what that would look like and what that would be. How's that going to happen? Massive raids? Massive detention camps? What are they talking about?
You have to remember, Obama, wasn't he the deporter in chief? Didn't he deport more people than any prior president? And I know Baccia is always on Fox talking about this.
Baccia Unger Sargon.
Yes, they want to paint Donald Trump as this extremist, this far-right figure. Anyone who knows Donald Trump knows he's not an extremist far-right figure whatsoever. And like you said, 60% of the country support mass deportations. They support a stronger immigration policy. That is a very centrist number, 6 out of 10. It's hard to get 6 out of 10 Americans to agree on almost anything.
So I just think that people, and she says, we just want to get a pathway to citizenship. We can do both. No, we can't. Mm-mm. You have to seal the border.
Right.
And then we talk about it. Not even the dreamers, do I think, which I thought was a layup for both sides. Dreamers, been here, born here. Mm-hmm. You go through a school system here, brought here as a child. You had no choice. Mm-hmm. We thought that now no one's even talking about that. There's fear that the illegal immigrants are going to vote and give credit to the people that got them here illegally.
And you know what's so interesting? You know, I read thousands of comments every single week. The people who want the strongest immigration policy and really to go through it the right way are my Hispanic followers, Hispanic Americans who came through, went through the process. They're the ones actually in a lot of these polls who want stricter immigration policy. But I guess Kamala Harris, she doesn't look at those polls.
So there's just I had a great guest on from The Washington Post, Mark Thiessen, who said, why are people willing to say that Donald Trump is going to go by the Project 2025, which he's never read, never signed on to?
Has denounced.
But we are assume that Kamala Harris is not going to go on Project 2019 because everything that she ran on, she now reversed. We just accept it. She never said it. She just reversed it. Never gave reason for it. Just reversed it. Mm-hmm. So instead of someone saying, here's a 900-page doctrine you haven't read yet, you have to disavow it. Why not just ask Kamala Harris, tell me why you're leaving all the policies you said? Were you that naive in 2019?
Well, Brian, the key word there is ask Kamala Harris. She did one interview on CNN on a major network. It was 16 minutes long, and her VP, Mr. Jazz Hand, sat there chaperoning her the entire time. She did another interview for 10 minutes Friday night on a local Philadelphia affiliate. We got no substantive answers.
It was one of the worst interviews she's ever given.
Utter calamity. That interview was terrible. I don't know how they're even letting her go back out after that interview. The way she's showing her face, the gall of Kamala Harris. So the key word there is ask Kamala Harris. When are we going to ask Kamala Harris? She's too chicken to come into Fox News to do an interview. How is she going to take on Putin, Kim Jong-un, President Xi? You think the guys in the Middle East have a lot of respect for women? How are you going to run that table when you're too scared to sit down and do interviews?
So no one cares about foreign policy, it seems. Tell me what people are doing on TikTok, what they care most about. You say they're not watching the news, but they get the news in small bites.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the video I did on Kamala Harris's interview Friday night has over 3.5 million views. So there's interest in Kamala Harris, and people want to hear the truth
about
her. So
your review of her.
I just did a recap of the utter calamity that interview was. The number one issue for people on TikTok that I notice is affordable housing, right? How am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to get into a home? And if you think Kamala Harris is going to help you, you got a bad thing coming.
But if all these spending programs mm-hmm. that she plans on implementing come true, who's paying for it?
Well, that's my point, too, right? So we're roughly $40 trillion in debt as a country. When she says she wants to give $25,000 to first-time homeowners, she wants to do this, she wants to do that, she has no way of getting this passed. These are just campaign promises to try and win over votes, to buy votes, basically, like they did with the college stuff. So I'm not really believing anything that comes out of Kamala Harris's mouth. She says, my values have not changed, but your policies have done a 180. So
how interested is, let's say, the Gen Z, whatever, mm-hmm. in what's going on overseas in the Middle East, especially with Israel?
What's interesting is if you had asked me this last fall and even in the spring when we saw all of those protests on college campuses, especially here in New York, they had the encampments, I would have told you that was a major, major issue. I think the summer took a little bit of that away. The number one issue is, how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to get a home? I don't think foreign policy is top of the mind for my generation, actually. I think online, the extremists have the loudest voices, so you think that's the case, but it really isn't when you get out there and talk to people.
What about forgiving debt?
Look, they want their debt forgiven. I don't want to live in a world where you get things for free. I think I'd rather have an economy where people can get jobs and work and pay their bills. And that's going to happen when we get inflation down.
So right now they say it is down, leaving Jerome Powell mm-hmm. To say this. He has a huge cut.
Right before
sure
the election,
the market,
though.
So 463, it's up right. 463 points. Sustainable? We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Listen to Jerome Powell yesterday about whether politics is at mm-hmm. work. Cut 32.
We do our work to serve all Americans. We're not serving any politician, any political figure, any cause, any issue, nothing. It's just maximum employment and price stability on behalf of all Americans. And that's how the other central banks are set up, too. It's a good institutional arrangement, which has been good for the public. And I hope and strongly believe that it will, you know, continue.
But if people look at their 401k, they feel better about it. And they look at Trump, I'm worried mm-hmm. about it. And Kamala Harris is smiling all the time. Does this help her?
So I can't speak to whether it helps or not. What I can tell you is what I read every single day is when moms and dads go to the grocery store and feel sticker shock. When they go to put milk, eggs in their grocery cart and they say, how am I going to feed my family? I've got 3 kids, 4 kids. How am I going to feed them? I also hear from young people who say this apartment that was $1,000 a month a few years ago is now $2,500 a month. It's $3,000 a month. So where am I going to live? Am I going to live with 5 roommates? That is what's affecting them. And if you look at all these polls, Trump is doing much better when it comes to the economy, immigration, these top line issues. Kamala, she's winning on abortion. She's winning on vibes. But let's see what shakes out on November 5th.
All right. So let's take a look at the polls right now. Fox mm-hmm. came out with some polls and the next
she was up, wasn't she up? Maybe?
She is up slightly. But here is on our poll in particular, in the Democrat for Harris, mm-hmm. she has 50%. She's at 50 to Trump's 48 nationally. In August, it was 49-50 in favor of Trump. Mm-hmm. In July versus Biden, Trump was up 1. So there's not much of a difference mm-hmm. there. Choice for president if voting right now. Harris on registered voters gets 50. On likely voters, same thing. Trump's at 48. But national polls, no one's thinking that Trump, his strategy is not to win a national popularity contest, to win the Electoral College. On Hispanics, it was in August. She had 46% of the vote, now 55. For independents, she has 51. She had 43. So that works better for her. She's coming up. Mm-hmm. For those who regularly attend church, 61-37 Trump. White men, no degree, 59-38 Trump. Rural voters, 57-41 Trump. For men, 52-46 Trump. Black voters, 71-29 for Harris. Mm-hmm. Urban voters, 61-36. Men, anyone under 30. Harris by 23, 17, 57-40. And voters, 65 plus, 56-43. Harris over Trump. That surprised me. College graduates, Harris got the advantage. For women, Harris mm-hmm. has only got a 10-point advantage, so that's closing.
I think what we have to remember is there are a lot of people, they're not voting for Kamala Harris. They've been told for years Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. The country is going to come to an end.
And that's her
strategy. Paint Trump as this evil dictator boogeyman so they vote for me, even if they
hate
Kamala Harris.
That's the Obama strategy and Romney.
That's the strategy. So that's why people are coming out. Look, we have really close elections in this country. I know a lot of Trump people don't want to hear it. I know a lot of Kamala people don't want to hear it. This election is going to come down to potentially a few thousand votes in a few counties across 5 or 6 states. It's going to be very close. No one thinks Donald Donald Trump is going to win the popular vote, he's going for the Electoral College like he and Kellyanne strategized back in 2016. So they got to do that again here in 2024. The one thing I'd like to see more of from the Trump campaign is a little bit more of an outreach to suburban women in swing states, a little bit more of women. It seems like they're really doubling down on the guys and the bro podcast and the bro shows. I would love to see a little more outreach to those women.
All right. I'll see. They definitely, when it comes to abortion, she wins big, up 16. When it comes to immigration, he's up 10. Israel-Hamas war, he's up 7. Economy, he's only up 5. He's got to do a better job telling the difference. Guns, basically even. Taxes, basically even. Election integrity, Harris by 7. So, of course, the abortion thing, they're going to be doing transgender issues. I'm not sure that that's going to be a big deal, nor is climate change going to be a big deal.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that she says Trump is going to sign a federal national abortion ban. Hakeem Jeffries was posting it the other day. Kamala Harris, her campaign tweets every single day, Trump supports Project 2025 and he's going to sign a national abortion ban. He said publicly 1,000 times, I denounce Project 2025. He said 1,000 times on record, I will not sign a national abortion ban. But you got to get that message out to the people who need to hear it. And those are the women in swing states that you're not speaking to.
All right. Link Lauren, thanks so much. How do we follow you?
You can follow me on X, TikTok at It's Link Lauren. Thanks so much.
All right, Link. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We've got a few more minutes here, and I'm just wondering, is there a need to know more? The answer is yes, thanks to Prevagen. All right, Astros' Jose Altuve rips off a shoe and sock in a big fight with an umpire and gets ejected. Listen to how it sounded.
Hits Altuve's foot. They're going to say fair ball. Brendan Miller's going to say that ball didn't hit Altuve, and that's going to be the final out of the inning.
Altuve needs to be pulled out of the situation. They need to keep him in this game.
Altuve showing where it hit his foot. And now he's ejected.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
They should have got Altuve out of there. He's been ejected. We're going to have a tie game heading to the bottom of the ninth. Altuve will limp off the field. This game is crazy.
So Jose was adamant the ball clanked off his foot and should have been ruled foul, but the ump didn't see it that way, and he got thrown out of the game. Fortunately for the Astros, they went on to win. There's only about 10 games left in the season. Next. Diddy denied bail at an appeal hearing. A judge keeps Combs behind bars pending a trial as damning new texts are revealed. Manhattan federal judge Andrew Carter said Combs' proposal for home detention, electronic monitoring, and $50 million bail was insufficient. Upholding a magistrate's decision from Tuesday, he remains in one of the worst prisons in the country. It is a hole over in Brooklyn, but this guy has a lot of accusers. That looks like to be an airtight case. He is flipping out. Next, Saturday Night Live will return for its 50th season on September 28th. The host will be Gene Smart, from Hacks, and musical guests will be Jelly Roll. October 5th, comedian Nate Bark, how do you say the last name? Barkataz will host with musical guests Coldplay and Ariana Grande and Steve Nicks, Michael Keaton and Billy Eilish on October 19th. John Mulaney will host on November 2nd with a musical guest, too. So we're about to start a new season, expected to be very unfair to Donald Trump, unlike past years when we really had some fun watching it. Next, Monday Night Football drew 15 million viewers for Week 2, a matchup between the Falcons and Eagles on September 16th, the third most watched game on ESPN in more than 50 games. And Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli had 1.3 million viewers, a 12% increase. I wonder from 2023. Monday Night Countdown at 1.4. Live with Kelly and Mark. That's our husband. Number one talk show for 25 to 54. But the numbers, by the way, really low. Family Feud, number one game show. That's bad for our country. It beats Jeopardy. Wheel of Fortune is third. And People Puzzler? Have you seen that? What is a People Puzzler?
That's how I feel when Eric speaks to me.
I know, but he doesn't speak to me. You're lucky. I wish we'd get on speaking terms again. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Brian Kilmeade Show from 48th and 6th, where most of the crime is committed by illegal aliens at the term of 75%. So we're not going down in crime. And safety in crime is going to be a major issue, I think, in this election. The one with the who has backed the law and order crowd, those who are in it and those who support it, are most likely going to go a long way to winning, I believe. Coming up in 20 minutes, Congressman David Kustoff. Not only is he always good to have on Ways and Means, we're trying to get a budget, not close down the government, but he's also chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group. I don't know if you see what's happened in Israel. I'll go over it shortly, but pretty impressive. Also, a special moment for the show every time we expand our family of affiliates, and that's what's happening today. We are welcoming now the Eagle on 100.1 FM, where Patriots live in Waverly, Ohio. It covers most of Southeast Ohio. Welcome aboard. I think you're going to love the show at a very important time for the country. Bill Hemmer at the bottom of the hour, America's anchor. On election coverage, he gets into the micro-dosing in a way that I didn't think was possible. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, it's an extraordinary intelligence success. Israel was able to penetrate Hezbollah, the supply chain for these pagers and for the walkie-talkies. It probably took months, if not years, to do that. It causes tremendous harm to Hezbollah.
That is Dan Hoffman, who knows. Israel attacks through the air and through another wave of device detonations. Have they officially opened up a war with Hezbollah? Is this the time to try to finish off the gold standard of terrorists?
Number two.
I want to emphasize, we are over 2 months, of course, since Butler. Do you know that the Secret Service still has not given congressional investigators the documents and evidence we have been asking for 2 months? 2 months since Trump was shot in the face.
That is Josh Hawley. He's outraged. That's on the first assassination. What about if you add them both together? Frustration and concern. We bring you inside both near-death experiences for the former president.
Number one.
And the reason I'm here is because hasn't been done in many decades. It hasn't been done for a long time, but we are going to win New York.
There you go. The crowd roars. How about 18,000 on the inside? How about 5,000 on the outside? Trump rallies on Long Island, getting a key endorsement of making history, while Harris rants on deportation and gets ready for Oprah. Under 50 days to go. We got new polls. It's anyone's race to win or to lose. And I believe that's going to be an important part. I was there last night. I was able to go to Nassau Coliseum. If you've never been to Long Island, it's where the Islanders reigned, ripped off four cups and dominated for quite some time with the Nets, with Dr. J played in the ABA. So what they did is they scaled it back, made it more of a concert hall, and it was perfect for President Trump. He wanted to come back. They got at least three lawmakers looking to hold on to seats in blue seats that went to Joe Biden, not last time. And they came and spoke. Lee Zeldin came and spoke. Anthony D'Esposito came and spoke. It was a real good night, and it was fantastic. For the people there, they were thrilled, not only after the assassination that he was alive, that he had his A game. I mean, he talked about substance, talked about policy, talked about crime, talked about immigration, talked about the economy, and really his opponent. But I thought he was all business last night. I thought it was really good. I think you add to Governor Huckabee of Arkansas when she went over to Michigan and interviewed the former president the day before. And then on Sunday, wanted to play a little golf and had a guy with a long gun looking to kill him. So that's what his life is like. Earlier in the day, he went out and made the first official presidential Bitcoin purchase. And he bought a bunch of hamburgers with Bitcoin, with cyber currency. So pretty cool. He's moving fast. He went and did Gutfeld yesterday. Very funny. Had a relaxed setting. Had a great time with Tyrus and Kat and Emily. So I thought that was really important for it to show that side of him again. You know, consider they were trying to kill him a couple of days ago. To come down and put yourself to that. And then on the other hand, you have somebody that just won't put themselves in any unscripted situation. It's such an embarrassment. One of the things he was asked, it was a little offbeat, was the criticism he's getting from some celebrities. Robert De Niro famously lost his mind. And then Howard Stern. He's somebody that's always been counterculture, had Trump on all the time, came out and yesterday and basically says, I hate Trump voters. No, didn't say I hate Trump, said it shouldn't be president. But he says, I don't hate Trump, but I hate Trump voters. Cut five.
I watch. I know some of them. And like Howard, I was on Howard Stern's show as much as anybody. And
yeah.
he was great at that time. And then he went woke.
Yeah.
And since he's gone woke, his ratings have gone down the tubes. And he sort of went anti-Trump for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. But I was on his show a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, he has a best of. Did you ever see the best of Howard Stern? I don't want to promote it necessarily, but and I was there for just about all of them. The best of. We had good shows. It was good, but he's changed, and you know he doesn't do the ratings anymore.
So he doesn't do the ratings because he's on Sirius XM. But to go out and just say 50% of your audience jump in the lake. And you know who also said that? Jimmy Kimmel. So Jimmy Kimmel feels the exact same way. Susan, listening to WABC in upstate New York. Hey, Susan.
Hi there. Yes, the rally was very upbeat. I just really feel like he missed a huge opportunity. He did speak about how Harris and, you know, the leftists want to tax unrealized capital gains, but he only mentioned stocks. Now, you know, having a roof over your head is a primal need. And I think with all those homes, I mean, Long Island, there's a few Democrats out there that own homes, I think, and that this is something that has to be drilled down on and explained, because when you say unrealized capital gain, I mean, what does that mean? It means that if your house has appreciated in value, which almost all real estate, especially homes in New York, that they're going to assess that market value. And you're living in your house with your family, and all of a sudden, oh, you owe on an extra $250,000, and you have to come up with that tax. And many people would lose their homes. And if you want suburban housewives, this should be discussed. It's got to be in your top three, Brian, every day, because that just the fact that she even thought that, let alone spoke that that is something that could happen, is outrageous.
I hear you. It would never pass Congress, but the fact that someone told her it's a good idea to even present it is idiotic. I mean, someone who has no idea about the market, doesn't have anything but a government job. I mean, people who are in government are going to work hard that Trump doesn't win, because he's going to be gutting that place. I think Elon Musk for real is going to be an efficiency expert. They're going to create havoc in Washington for the right reasons. But that's another thing to bring up. Yeah, he didn't bring up a lot of Harris, that she doesn't answer any questions, talks in circles. I mean, it's just so embarrassing. She was doing it again yesterday. Not only doing something I think is dumb, and that's slamming mass deportation. Most of the country wants it. Listen to her talk about children of the community again. Cut 11.
The vast majority of parents have a desire to raise their children well. They love their children, but don't necessarily have the resources to do everything their child needs. I grew up understanding the children of the community are the children of the community.
I mean, this is what he's competing against. I mean, Donald Trump will repeat himself because he wants to emphasize it. Does she even know how idiotic she sounds? And the vast majority of parents have a desire to raise their children well. That's news. They love their children. I had no idea, but don't necessarily have the resources to do everything for them. That's not government's job. Help, absolutely get out of the way, see if there's something stopping her. But we cannot support every child. That's socialism. I want to make sure there's some safety nets in place. Absolutely. There are things cities and states can do, but the federal government's doing that? Listen to this. Cut 12.
In fact, recently I was in Nevada. I'm in these streets. Let me tell you, I'm everywhere.
Yeah, she's working hard. So it's become a joke. So I just think the American people have higher standards than that. Nobody thought that Bill Clinton didn't know his stuff. No one thought that Barack Obama was young, but no one thought that he wasn't a quick learner. I mean, he did great in 2008. The economy was falling apart. He didn't say he had all the answers. No one did. He went to school with Hank Paulson, did a better job than John McCain. This is how you win it. But how you win it, putting yourself in bubble wrap, is not the way it's usually done. And also making President Trump unacceptable by stapling him to things he's not going to do. He's not going to get rid of Medicare. He's not going to get rid of Social Security. He's not going to be a dictator. He's not calling for a bloodbath if he loses. Everything I said that he's been accused of is not happening. Also, Project 2025, he's not subscribing to it. Kevin Roberts, the Heritage Foundation president that came up with it, said this so much and they're not even allowed to give it to him, it would breach his 501c3 covenant. So when we come back, Congressman David Kustoff, Ways and Means Committee and Chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group. Don't move.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Israeli defense minister said today that this is a new era of the war. What's the White House's response to that? And how concerned are you that this will cause this escalation?
All I'll say is that we want to see the war end. And everything we've been doing since the beginning has been designed to prevent the conflict from escalating. We still believe, for instance, that there is a diplomatic path forward.
That is John Kirby. All we say is we want the war to end. Really? I thought one of your objectives is to end the right way to stop this war from gearing up again 9 months later, which will happen if it ends wrong. I just want it to end because the election's coming up. Admiral John Kirby, Congressman David Kustoff joins us now. Not only is he on Ways and Means Committee and Chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group, that is one of your expertise and your passions. Congressman, do you find that John Kirby explanation acceptable?
Well, the fact of the matter is Israel needs to win, Brian, and the goal should be get the hostages back, get them back, defeat Hamas, and protect Israel from on all of its borders, because Israel is surrounded by hate, and we've seen that through the years. It really began to escalate, obviously, almost a year ago, October the 7th. The fact of the matter is we need to stand firmly with Israel. We need to demonstrate that not only to our people, not only to the Israelis, but to the hate that surrounds Israel around the world and around its borders.
So the AP is now reporting that Lebanon's health ministry says that yesterday's attack killed 20 with 450 wounded. The day before, thousands are wounded when their pages blew up. Yesterday, their walkie-talkies blew up and their solar panels blew up. Your reaction to this, to what seems to be an Israeli operation against the number one terrorist group in the world?
Well, I applaud the Israelis. And the fact of the matter is that the Israelis have a lot of capability, stuff that to some people may look like it comes from a spy movie, with exploding pagers and exploding walkie-talkies. And, of course, we saw some of the ingenuity, you know, previously before that with the destruction of the terrorist a few weeks
Hania,
ago.
Hania over in a townhouse, a guest house in Iran.
That's right. So, and the Israeli military and the Israeli intelligence have more capability than what we've seen in the last couple of days, and that's good to keep everybody on their toes. I think that if you look at a map and you look at Israel, if you look at how small and compact it is, and truly the enemies and the people that want to see the nations that want to see Israel destroyed, that surround its borders, Israel has to do what Israel has to do in order to protect itself. We know about Hamas. We know about Hezbollah. We know about the proxies that Iran sponsors, and they come through. They come through Lebanon. They come through other places. And Netanyahu has said this publicly. He's talked about this, that they have to be aggressive, or otherwise they're going to be on the defense. And the fact of the matter is, Brian, nobody wants to see another October the 7th.
They tried to assassinate him, too, using the Iran, who's going to sponsor some Israeli to try to kill him. They stopped that plot. They also tried to blow up another official. They stopped that plot. Now, I understand there's a major agreement that's on the table, not phased. All the hostages back, or the bodies back, prisoners released. The IDF pulls out of Gaza. They bring in an international force, and they let Sinwar go to a third country. Does that sound like something that would be acceptable?
Well, I certainly don't want to speak for Prime Minister Netanyahu. I mean, he has said, and I'll simplify what you just said a moment ago. he has said that if Hamas were to lay down its arms, there would be no more war. If Israel laid down its arms, there would be no more Israel. So you talked about part of the equation. They just need to get back the hostages, and if they have hostages that have died in their captivity, the bodies need to be returned. That, to me, that is the very first step, and Israel should not compromise until all those hostages are released.
Congressman David Kustoff, our guest, he's a Tennessee congressman. He's on Ways and Means. So, Congressman, we had a speaker try to fund the government for the next 6 months, and it got rejected, didn't get passed the House. I think you lost 15 Republicans on it. The Safe Voting Act is part of it. That didn't go over. Almost no Democratic support. Are you guys going to fund the government?
The government needs to be funded past September the 30th. That's when government funding runs out. And I think your listeners, they've seen this movie before. They saw it last year that essentially forced out former Speaker McCarthy. This was the same time period and the same track. The fact of the matter is Congress should have gotten this act together a lot sooner. There are 12 spending bills. The House of Representatives through today has passed 5 of the 12. That's not acceptable. The United States Senate has passed 0 of 12. And so we're in the situation that we're in. We need to pass what's called a continuing resolution. The acronym is CR. Fund the government through some date and time, whether that is March, whether it's December or whatever. Let's get our act together. Let's try to get spending under control. But we don't want to see a government shutdown. Number one, you don't want to see it any time, but you certainly don't want to see it 4 and 5 weeks before the election day.
So do you think the Republicans realize that in the House?
I think most House Republicans realize that. I would like to think that most House Democrats realize that. Frankly, the Democrats could have joined in yesterday and voted for this continuing resolution to keep the government open through March. But to your point, we got very few Democrats, 2 or 3 Democrats. So it takes 2 to tango. You know that the margins in the House of Representatives are very thin. The margins in the Senate are very thin. We need something that's viable, that's going to get enough Republicans and Democrats, and let's keep the government open.
Real quick, you think the Secret Service moved back to Treasury? Why?
Well, you know, the Secret Service was part of the Department of Treasury up until the time that the Homeland Security Department was created. My opinion is, and it has been, and I'm a former United States attorney, so I used to work a lot with the Secret Service. It's a better fit under Treasury for everything that they do. And do we really want Mayorkas overseeing the Secret Service? I think
no.
The answer is no.
Yeah, and it hasn't worked since. They need some isolation, and they need to be revamped. I think that's safe to say. Thanks, Congressman. I look forward to your bill.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Teamsters for many, many decades always automatically support the Democrats.
Right.
This year they refused to do it, and they took a poll. And we got 60% in the poll in the Teamsters, and they're not going to support the Democrats this year. They're going to, I guess, remain neutral.
There you go. The President of the United States getting a lot of applause at Gutfeld last night. Then he got 18,000 at Nassau Coliseum last night, yesterday afternoon for Gutfeld. You saw it at night. And then he got some good news in the afternoon, too, because he went and visited a hamburger shop and paid with cryptocurrency. And that was a historic move. And that just in one day. It was a pretty good day for him. Bill Hemmer covered it all as co-anchor of America's Newsroom.
What's happening?
You see him every day, the team with Dana Perino, see him on all the election coverage. So good day for the President of the United States as being at Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah.
He was totally in his element. Half prompter, half ad-libbing, not a two-hour speech, getting in and out. People were thrilled to see him.
I know you were out there. I was watching it at home or throughout the evening, wherever I was. And I thought he was on point. I thought he was on message in ways that sometimes he's not necessarily that focused. And I thought that's his home crowd. And I got to think a lot of his friends were there as well last night. Sometimes that tends to focus the mind a bit more. You mentioned this place in New York about the Bitcoin deal. I got home last night. I said, where is this place? It's called Pop Key or something. I'd have to look it up to get the right name. And it's about a block from my house. So I go over there. I saunter on over there, and it's packed. It's kind of like there's this restaurant in the Village called Blue Hill, and Barack Obama loved the place. And he and Michelle, when they come to New York, oftentimes they would go eat there.
Really?
Yeah, Obama was a big foodie. So when he came for like UN General Assembly, which is coming up, that he would pick new restaurants with up-and-coming chefs. And I'd always follow that because I wanted to go and check it out. Blue Hill was
one of
those
places. The same way?
No, if I want good ideas and I want good food. That's the point. So this dive bar, they may be offended if I call it a dive bar, was right next to it. It's below the street. I walk in there. It's packed. It's all men, all white, 40, 50, maybe 60 years old. A couple women, not many. And they've got, you know, make Bitcoin great again and all this stuff. And so I hung out for a minute just to get a sense for the vibe. And I'm walking out. These two guys are in suits at the door. I said, so you guys had a big event today. He says, yeah, it starts in an hour. And I said, I'm sorry, wasn't Trump here? He goes, yeah, but he left. He said, the big event is our Bitcoin event tonight. All these guys in this room are on the all-star team for the Bitcoin and Ethereum world in America.
Really?
Said, this is our all-star team that is gathered here tonight.
I don't even know what Ethereum would be.
Ethereum's on the blockchain. It's like the foundation for it. And the Bitcoin is actually the currency by which you can trade to purchase.
Pete, you're an expert on cybercurrency. Is this a good time to display?
How'd I do,
Pete?
How
much you know?
Yeah, I use it for all my purchases when it comes to fast food.
Yeah, can you give me an idea? Can you describe it briefly?
I will do that during the break.
All right.
You bend to the pressure, huh? It's called PubKey. I couldn't remember.
Oh, PubKey. Well, it's close.
There you go.
All right. So,
what else is on your mind?
Well, he had a big day. He's showing a lot. I just can't believe. I want to get to Israel because I know you have an expertise there too. But I do want to talk about what Kamala Harris isn't doing, and that's any interviews. And I've never seen a person take the stump speech to interviews, then and interviews to stump speeches. And this is somebody. She's not 28 years old, coming out of college with. She has been doing this for 25 years. Some type of campaigning. She's been debating for 25 years. How could she not know anything? She's vice president.
I don't know, and I don't have a good explanation for you, but she's doing an event today with Oprah. And I'm wondering whether or not it's going to be a lot of these softball questions about joy, or whether or not she's going, which I think will be, I would guess, is going to be half of it. But remember, Oprah was a reporter in Baltimore, Maryland, many decades ago. And I have to think, for her own credibility, she's got to ask her a few tough questions. That's my guess today.
I think, you know what she cares about with credibility? Getting her elected. I know how smart she is. I have true appreciation for her talent, and I'm not exaggerating. Really, really appreciate her journey to be successful in our business. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
She took Phil Donahue's format and made it better. Fantastic. I understand it. But I don't think that's her objective anymore. Just like Bob Costas, for example.
Yeah.
You know, Bob Costas, if you put him on as a commentator, he's a fantastic host, fantastic sportscaster, but he's unable to see anything moderate or conservative. He's an ultra-left commentator these days, and that's another ultra-talented guy.
He's a Midwest St. Louis, Missouri guy, too. I don't disagree with your observation of that. However, I think with Kamala, I don't know how long it can go. And what they're assuming, Brian, is that it's a winning strategy, and we don't know if it is. They're assuming that the old switcheroo is an okay thing, and we don't know if the American people are okay with that. And they're assuming that even though she hasn't gotten a single national vote, not one,
right?
They're assuming that we're okay with that. And, I mean, in sports, that's why you play the games, and that's why you hold the elections, and we'll find out 47 days from
right,
now.
Right, but right now Trump is doing better against her than he was against Biden or Hillary Clinton.
This is very interesting. We're on the board every day. We're trying to figure out the numbers from 2016, 2020, et cetera. This is what I am told from a variety of pollsters inside and outside the building. They undercounted Trump's vote in 2016. I think they had him around 41 pre-vote, I think. It might have been 42. It might have been a little higher. In 2020, they also had him in the low 40s. And today,
most of the pollsters have him between 48 and 50. Now you say, wow, if he's between 48 and 50, you undercount him 2020, undercount him 2016, he's going to win this thing, which he might. But what they say is that they have changed the methodology for how they gauge his support. Now, I don't know how they're doing that, and I don't know if it's a process that will prove out to be legitimate. But they've reached out to other people, trying to find and contact them, sometimes by cell phones now. And sometimes people just will not talk. And in some cases, they're going by way of text message. So they're trying to account right. for the voters that they missed in the last two election cycles.
And if they hang up angry, they give them to Trump?
That was apparently reported in the New York Times Siena survey. I mean, that's what's been reported. I can't verify it for you. But here's my point on this. They've now tried to adjust their process for the third straight national election. And we do not know yet whether or not it's going to be accurate. That's the point.
So I want you to hear a little of Harris yesterday. And, you know, we got that ridiculous interview with the black journalist the day before and ending with, can you describe joy? And I'm not kidding. Here's her yesterday. This is where I think she said it. But what she said, I think, is very 2016-ish. Cut 10.
And while we fight to move our nation forward to a brighter future, Donald Trump and his extremist allies will keep trying to pull us backward. We all remember what they did to tear families apart. And now they have pledged to carry out the largest deportation, a mass deportation, in American history. Imagine what that would look like and what that would be. How's that going to happen? Massive raids? Massive detention camps? What are they talking about?
Yes. They're going to start with criminals first. Yeah. And they're going to expand ICE and they're going to make a movement.
I saw a poll suggesting that the majority of people who were surveyed support taking the criminals and kicking them out. And I know Trump's talked about mass deportation, and maybe that's what he goes for if he's indeed elected. But what I'm hearing more is that they're going to go after the criminals, and they're going to go after the guys who have a criminal record back in Venezuela or El Salvador or Mexico, wherever they come from. That might be a good thing for America. It might be that we can go ahead and affect the crime rate.
Do you think
that's
an effective thing to bring up if she's trying to get undecided voters?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe their internal polls tell them something on that. You know, with our polling that came out yesterday, Brian, I thought one of the more surprising numbers was among African-American voters. I think Trump was single digits in 2016. I think it was single digits in 2020. And our polling has been somewhat consistent on this.
71-29,
yeah,
Harris.
So she gets 71 and he gets 29. Man, you cut that 29. Let's say that 29 number is 2x what it really is in real life. Let's say it's more like 15. But 15 is higher than 9. 15 is higher than 6. 15 is higher than 4. And you go into some of these swing states, and you look at Wayne County, which is Detroit, Michigan, or Milwaukee in Wisconsin. Or maybe you go into some of these suburbs of Atlanta in Fulton County. Maybe you go into Philadelphia or Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, and you start to take 10 or 15% of that minority vote away.
Right.
And in states that are decided by between 10 and 44,000 votes, 10 and 44,000 votes out of 5 million votes cast can make a big difference. That was one of the things that surprised me the most, that that number is right. holding up for him.
And the other thing I would say, she's closing in when it comes to immigration in this poll, on the economy. She's closing in. And in fact, it was like 1 point in the New York Times poll, mm-hmm. and it's about 5 here, when they have much different views about the economy, the millions of social spending that took place, the new Green Deal that went out that they told us an Inflation Reduction Act, the rescue package that went out, the infrastructure deal that hasn't been implemented. They haven't even built more than 8 terminals. So I'm wondering how she's closing the gap there. And is Project 2025 starting to resonate?
I don't know about that. You can kick that thing to the curb every time it's asked, and I don't know why they continue to do it or even talk about it. Two things also that come up here. Trump had a huge lead among independents with Joe Biden. And I think that lead is, in some polls, it's 50-50, and sometimes she's leading now.
And on the economy, I'm a bit surprised that the numbers are as close as they are. But here's what I think. You're 47 days away. This is the time when people start to focus about, if you were to win, what would your policies be?
Mm-hmm.
What would your economic policy be? What would your tax policy be? And define it for me and let me decide as to whether or not it's going to be good for me and my family.
A few Fridays ago, she made her announcement about paying taxes on unrealized
gains. I don't think a lot of people understand what that is.
But he should go out of his way to explain
it. If you bought Apple for $1,000 5 years ago, and now it's worth $5,000, they're saying the $4,000 gain you have on your initial investment can be taxed by the U.S. government.
Every year.
I don't know if in the history of the world that's ever happened.
And to do that, I'm going to have to sell it to get the cash out to pay the tax.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Who's going to have it? Like four people are going to have all this?
And if she continues to talk about it on November 6th, if she is the winner, then you're going to go ahead and sell it. The market's going to take a huge
hit.
When
we come back, the pagers that exploded, the walkie-talkies that exploded, is Israel about to take out Hezbollah? Can they do it? Is this their one chance? Bill Hemmer weighs in when we return.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I know you and your safety and the special Secret Service, but do you worry about your family, too?
I do. I don't talk about it, but I do. I have to worry about family. I have to worry about everybody. I worry about you. I worry about everybody because, look, we're under siege, and no country has ever suffered like we have for the last 3.5, almost 4 years. I do. I want to protect everybody.
So that was President Trump with me yesterday at
the,
and you're going to see the whole interview Saturday night, 9 o'clock on One Nation.
He talks to everyone.
Right.
Just in case. I just saw a graphic, 55-14, I think, is the current track for interviews that Trump and Vance have done versus Harrison Wall. Sorry.
I mean, I didn't know it was
bigger. I interrupted you. I apologize.
By the way, just in case anyone thought it was exclusive, Bill let everybody know he talks to everyone. Just in case I felt special.
I didn't mean that way.
Guys, if you see my self-esteem going up, do what Bill Hemmer did.
You know I didn't mean it that way.
But just a quick note. I'll be in Peekskill, New York, October 20th, History, Liberty, and Laughs. You read all my books, and you memorize them. You listen to the books on tape.
Yes.
And you know I bring those books to life, and we reenact great moments in history on stage. BrianKilmeade.com.
I love it. Check it out. 10/20/24.
Right.
There
so,
it is. All right.
So when
Middle
I,
East, go.
So what's happened to Israel over the last year is just astounding. October 7th is coming up again. It's going to be 1 year since those horrific attacks. Not many people understand that October 8th, Hezbollah started sending rockets into Israel. So can you imagine being bombed in the north and the south regularly? What Israel's done now, they're doing the best they can to wipe out Hamas, but ingeniously, they found a way to get some liquid explosives into pagers ordered by Nasrallah's terrorists because they didn't trust cell phones. They thought they were being tapped. So at a certain time, with switches in there, they hit those phones, and those pagers blew up, killing about 30, wounding thousands. And then the next day, walkie-talkies blew up along with solar panels. Bill Hemmer, put this in perspective.
Remarkable stuff. I mean, the spy movies forever. Got a lot to say about this. I was talking with a member of our staff yesterday. She's a bit young, like 24, 25, and she said, "What's a pager?" I said, "Great question."
Wow.
I said, "Yeah, how would you know what a pager is?"
Yeah.
I said, "It's a very basic form of communication where somebody sends you a number. Like if your pager were to receive a message, maybe it gives you a number that you need to call back. And sometimes there's a text in there too. In this case, there was a text." I thought it was genius. We obviously think it's the Israelis. I mean, right? What else would you think? I got to thinking, Brian. If they've got this technology, Russia wants this technology, and Ukraine wants this technology, and China wants it, and we want it, because it can be so subversive, used in so many different
ways. They're building our phones.
Tom Cotton was on the air yesterday. He was talking about, hey, you're going to pick up a phone, you're going to use your toaster, you're going to turn on your hair dryer. He's thinking about what Hezbollah is thinking about right now. I just got to thinking, like, if you're a politician and you're working a rope line, somebody hands you a phone and says, hey, talk to my mom. You're going to reach a point where you're not going to take that phone. I mean, it was exceedingly crafty. Now we move to the reality for today. Nasrallah is the head of Hezbollah. He talked a lot. He had a long statement that happened for about an hour earlier today. And he's pretty much telling the Israelis, the 80,000 people who evacuated out of the northern part of the country more than almost a year ago should not return to their homes. What Hezbollah will do is that they will fire from the southern Bekaa Valley into northern Israel. The last time this happened was 2006.
And they've been doing it.
They've been doing it, but not to the degree that you would expect. They've been basically aiming at military sites and military installations.
But all those people are gone for a reason.
They are gone for a reason because they want to live. But here's what happens. In 2006, they were taking this very rudimentary rocket, running out in their backyard, firing from the driveway, and hoping it hits something. Well, now we're 18 years later, and those rockets are no longer dumb rockets. They're just not guessing anymore. There's GPS on it that makes them 10 times, if not 20 times, more effective, and that's the big danger about another front being opened up in this war.
So I think they're exhausted. I get it. But they also see they have a window with Hezbollah. They're only going to get stronger. The whole country's in a war footing. They think they could handle Hamas, finish off Hamas. This might be the moment when they are so discombobulated that they go for the kill with Hezbollah.
You might not be wrong. And I hope it's not the case because Israel is like a boxer up against the ropes right now. And they're swinging this way and they're swinging that way.
But they're hitting a lot, by the way.
And they're trying to fight their way up. But they got the Houthis in Yemen and they got Iran backstopping all this stuff. And there's an area of the West Bank that we haven't talked about. I mean, there's a strong chance it's been rebuilt over the past decade.
Bill Hemmer, thanks so much.
You got it.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.